This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, if you've had COVID-19, you may have some questions about natural immunity, the vaccines, and more. We'll get some answers from a Wisconsin epidemiologist. Now, President Biden pulled up to the White House yesterday in something other than the usual black limousine. That was Biden peeling out, sort of, in a plug-in hybrid Jeep Wrangler before announcing some new federal targets for electric vehicle production and emission standards. Biden had said during the presidential campaign that he intended to reverse Trump administration actions that had limited the fuel economy goals set while Barack Obama was president. You can join in at 608-890-3452. That's a temporary number, 608-890-3452. What thoughts do you have about a more electrified automotive future in this country? Do you already drive a hybrid, plug-in, or fully electric vehicle of some sort? Tell us about it. Have you considered purchasing one of those types of vehicles? Do you want to see a stronger fuel economy standards in the U.S.? Call in now at 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Steph Tai is a professor of law at UW-Wisconsin Law School, focusing on environmental law, administrative law, and contracts. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
And Michelle Krebs is executive analyst with Cox Automotive. Michelle, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Michelle, let's start with you. I want to listen to a little bit of what President Biden said yesterday, envisioning a future for the auto industry that's electric.
Battery, electric, plug-in, hybrid, electric, fuel cell electric. It's electric, and there's no turning back. The question is whether we'll lead or fall behind in the race for the future.
Michelle, what stands out to you about the goals we heard from the president yesterday?
I think first what stood out to me is we've not set a goal before. So this is the first time we have set a goal. President Biden has targeted, and that's not a binding thing, 50% of all new vehicles by 2030 will be electrified. And by that, it means pure electric vehicles. It means plug-in hybrids and fuel cell vehicles.
Steph, compared to standards in the past, if these goals are fulfilled, and we'll talk about the if part of that in a bit, how big a deal is this for overall efforts to control climate change emissions in the U.S.?
So the transportation sector is a large contributor to carbon emissions, and so this would have a very significant kind of effect. But to the extent that it's having an effect beyond what would have happened beforehand, it's less big than one might think. That is, California had already been moving in this direction, and this goal is a goal that has already been adopted by California. And that same goal, due to various aspects of federal law, can be adopted by other states. So other states were already moving in that direction. So it's not like this came out of nowhere, but it is still a significant move.
Michelle, I've heard from some analysts, maybe from you in the past, that, you know, what the United States does may not matter so much anymore if, say, European demand for lower emissions vehicles is going up. And if China is trying to take the lead on it, how big a deal is it to see these kind of priorities in the U.S. in particular?
Oh, I think it's extremely important. China is the biggest EV market in the world and the biggest car market. But, you know, we're not far behind, and Europe is another big market. So, you know, it's got to be the big markets that take the lead. And frankly, the U.S. has been lagging, right? I think President Biden made a remark about, you know, China's got leadership right now, and we don't want them to have leadership.
And Steph, can you talk about the kind of zigzag we've seen in the U.S. as we change from Republican to Democrat to back in the White House?
Yeah, so, I mean, we saw how the Trump administration, and actually, so the Biden administration goals were similar, but are actually stronger than some of the sort of Obama administration goals. However, when going from Obama to Trump, the Trump administration removed a lot of these sort of Obama administration goals. So this is putting in place sort of a stronger kind of goal. So you see this sort of up and down. At the same time, you see this overlay of what states were doing, because when the Trump administration removed some of these emission standards and backed off from the Obama administration emission standards. Some of the states, such as California that I mentioned before, started stepping in. And these were large market states. So when they were stepping in, there was additional leverage being created, not from the federal government, but from sort of various state governments.
We're talking to Steph Tighe from UW-Wisconsin Law School and Michelle Krebs with Cox Automotive, looking at yesterday's announcement from the Biden administration aiming to boost production of electric vehicles and related infrastructure in the United States. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452. Let's go to your calls now. Owen is with us in Wyawega. Owen, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking the call. So I'm all for electrification. My big concern is, as a farmer and a diesel technician, I work two different occupations. We dealt with this with John Deere for a long time. They have proprietary authority over a lot of their software and any type of ability for independent repair facilities to work on their equipment. So I'm trying to figure out, and I work on Freightliner, Peterbilt, Kenworth, Volvo, all those different trucks. Now, for Volvo, for instance, you can't change the turbo on their trucks without having the computer actuation ability to recalibrate the wastegate on the turbo actuator. So you could change the turbo, but you couldn't make the truck run without their software.
Oh, and thanks for the call. Your line's a little muffled. I don't know if you heard it, but Michelle, bring up the point of repairing these electric vehicles on the market. That's one of the questions about the infrastructure out there. Is this a concern that if we have these electric vehicles flooding the market, that they may be a challenge for the repair business and folks like Owen?
Certainly. And that's going to require a lot of retraining of automotive technicians. So that is a big concern. And who is going to do those repairs? Well, what happens, you know, do they go back to the dealership? How do independent repair shops deal with that? So that is yet to be worked out. And they require, you know, more expertise in software, electrical engineering than our current engines that rely more heavily on mechanical engineering.
Thanks, Owen, for that call at 608-890-3452. And yes, Steph, go ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention, too, the right of repair, because on July 9th, President Biden did also sign an executive order regarding the right of repair and urging the Federal Trade Commission to enact regulations that would enhance the right of individuals versus the company like John Deere to be able to repair farm equipment, and not just farm equipment, but many other equipment types of equipment. And so I think these two types of efforts can work in conjunction with each other.
Thanks again for that call, Owen. And Michelle, with infrastructure, of course, there's the charging infrastructure. Where are you going to fill your electrical tank, if I can mix a metaphor there? What did the Biden administration have to say to tell people that, yeah, if you drive these things across the country, you're going to be able to charge them?
Well, this is going to be the number one challenge for EV adoption. And when we do surveys of consumers, that is, besides cost, that is their biggest concern. We have this infrastructure bill, the bipartisan Senate bill, that actually halved the amount of money that the Biden administration wanted for EV charging infrastructure. So that is going to be a big challenge if we're going to have this many EVs on the road. So we're going to have to figure that out, because infrastructure is absolutely critical to adoption of EVs.
And Steph, I know people have raised the concern, like, okay, yeah, it's electricity, but you have to generate the electricity somehow. Does going from an internal combustion engine to partial or fully electric have a big environmental impact?
Yeah, and that is very dependent on the source of electrical energy in whatever area that you're charging your vehicle. That is, and I tell my students this all the time, electric vehicles, great and all, if you are in a state with many renewables, right? If it's mostly renewables that are contributing to the electric grid, then that's fine. You're moving to a renewable energy source. But if the state is pretty much entirely coal-fired, then you haven't made as much of a change as you might think. So this has to be done in conjunction with a lot of other types of efforts.
We're talking about new federal targets for electric vehicle sales and auto emission standards President Biden announced yesterday. Our guests are UW-Madison law professor Steph Tai and Cox Automotive executive analyst Michelle Krebs. And you can join in at 608-890-3452. What are some hurdles you worry about when you think about a fully or partially electric vehicle? What things would help solve those problems for you? What would help attract you to that? Do you want to see this be a priority from the federal government, from automakers? Call 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with automotive analyst Michelle Krebs and law professor Steph Tai looking at new proposed electric vehicle sales and emission standards we heard from the White House yesterday. You can call in with your thoughts, experiences maybe, or your questions at 608-890-3452. That's 608-890-3452 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now with Philothea in Viroqua. Philothea, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've had two electric vehicles, one a Nissan Leaf, which was all electric, and I opted to go for a plug-in hybrid, and I'm driving a Chevy Volt right now. And I just wanted to make some comparisons and some obstacles I've run into.
Go for it.
For one thing, I found out now that not all the charging stations are going to be compatible with all the electric vehicles. And I feel like that's really, really important. So my Volt was compatible with my charging station at home for my Nissan Leaf. But I understand it won't be compatible for a Tesla, you know, charging stations. And I think that's a problem. Also, I think that the plug-in hybrid is really the best, because unless you have charging stations every 10 miles and many charging stations in each town and hundreds in cities, I mean, it needs a huge infrastructure. And I have run out of range and been stuck someplace where I couldn't plug in anywhere. So those are some of my concerns.
Philothea, thanks a lot for sharing that firsthand experience. Michelle, these are problems that still need solving. Is that right?
Yes. Range anxiety is real. And she actually experienced something more than anxiety,
right.
Actuality. And I don't know where she comes from. And, you know, plug-in hybrids are probably a good bridge for people who don't have access to charging infrastructure. On the charging infrastructure in terms, yes, Tesla has its own design. The company has said it's going to open that up to be compatible with others, as I understand it, but that hasn't happened yet. But that is a hurdle we need to overcome, is to have charging stations that accommodate everyone, that are maintained, they're always working. There are a lot of things we need to do about the way we design them.
Thanks a lot for sharing that experience, Philothea. Steph, I've seen some reaction from environmental groups who were hoping the White House was going to go further on more mandatory standards in particular, as opposed to some of the voluntary components. Where do you see this falling short in any way?
Yeah, so there isn't anything mandatory in here. There is a call, however, for both the EPA and the Department of Transportation to start work on what's called rulemakings, to make things to create standards that might be more mandatory. Now, it's just a call, they say, as appropriate and consistent with applicable law, which these agencies may ignore, but it is a push for these agencies to create what's called administrative rules, which is basically giving the sort of force of law to particular types of standards. So this could happen. We don't see this directly in the executive order, but it provides the opportunity to do so. And it makes sense in a way that these types of details are not contained in the executive order because these types of rules can be challenged quite easily. That is, one of the things I teach is administrative law, and it's the standards where agencies have to pass particular rules. And without doing this background work, without providing scientific justification, economic justification, whatever, these rules can get overturned. So in a way, it makes sense that the executive order doesn't contain all that. But by directing them to start work on this, it at least starts the ball rolling on these rules, should the agencies move forward with that.
Let's go back to our callers now with Jack on the line in Madison. Jack, hi.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about, Jack?
So I just wanted to say, as nice as it would have been, like, had this happened maybe sometime in the past decade, I am really glad that the president is taking this opportunity to invest in electric vehicles, to spread the message of EVs, and to get people talking about it, if nothing else. And then hopefully, at least when people are thinking of buying their next car, they will go with a Tesla Model 3 or a Nissan Leaf or whatever the newest and coolest vehicle is that car owners are looking at. So I'm just really glad this is happening now, even if it's like maybe 5 to 10 years in the making, depending on when the first EVs hit the market early on. But this is terrific, and I'm really glad this is happening now.
And do you have one of these yourself, Jack?
Yes, my parents happen to own a Tesla Model 3, and I'm looking to one-up them with the Model S.
Jack, thanks a lot for sharing that. And Michelle, among consumers, are we getting to a tipping point with more people like Jack jumping on the bandwagon, in this case that his parents started?
I wouldn't say that we're at a tipping point, but we certainly are. When we interview people on our surveys, we definitely are seeing them say that they are more willing to consider an EV. EV sales, while they're still very small, this last quarter they increased 255%. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there are more choices out there, and there are becoming some more, you know, not everybody can afford a Tesla. And so we're starting to see vehicles from Ford and Volkswagen and Chevy are a little bit more affordable. And affordability is a big challenge. And that's one that concerns me a lot going forward.
Jack, thanks for that call. We're talking to Michelle Krebs with Cox Automotive and Steph Tai, professor at UW-Madison Law School, about electric vehicles. A big announcement from the Biden administration setting goals anyway for more electric and hybrid vehicles on the road. Back to your calls now. John is on the road on the way to Door County. John, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Well, good. What do you want to bring up, John?
Well, you know, you guys brought it up a little bit earlier about where do you get the electricity? Now, you talked about coal, and nuclear wasn't brought up. And I think the coal industry has their emissions pretty much under control, federal government control, and nuclear too. But what happens to nuclear waste? Now, I'm all for electric vehicles. I'm an old hot rodder from the old days, but I'm all for electric vehicles. But what really concerns me is, are we going from the fire into the frying pan with as far as
I gotcha, John. Thanks a lot for the call. Steph, I know coal use has been way down, natural gas way up, renewables going up. How about the nuclear that John had mentioned there?
Nuclear is remaining fairly static. It's been around like 10%. This sort of share the electric generating capacity. And a lot of it is kind of dependent on sort of siting and stuff like that. So less dependent on... So here's the thing. So with siting and getting permits for a nuclear facility, there's a lot of hurdles to go through. And those hurdles include both federal law and some state law kind of aspects. And that's the main barrier to the sort of proliferation to nuclear energy. And that hasn't changed a lot. So I don't expect to see the growth of that. Although, again, the Biden administration could do some tipping point, but I haven't seen any kind of sense that they're going to interfere too much with either increasing nuclear energy or decreasing nuclear energy. So I expect that most of the changes will be in coal-fired versus renewables versus maybe natural gas.
John? John, thanks for the call. That reminds me, Michelle, we've been talking about how we generate the energy. How about storage and batteries? This was part of the Biden administration announcement yesterday, hoping to boost the battery production here in the U.S. instead of relying on places like China. What are the hurdles we'd have to overcome in the auto industry to get those batteries?
Well, those are big ones. So we have to build more plants that make batteries, and we have to find minerals like cobalt, for instance, lithium, that are mined in a ethical, sustainable way and processed maybe here. We don't do that. And so that is an important thing. A lot of those minerals are in places where they use child labor, for instance, and we need to pay attention to that. So that is part of the infrastructure we need to build to build the batteries, to build the electric vehicles, and preferably here. You know, there's been a big computer chip shortage in the auto industry, and I think that's been an eye-opener to the industry and to the government that we are too dependent for those kinds of things on Asia.
And Steph, just in our last minute, you mentioned transportation, the leading climate change emitter in the U.S., but not the only one, and only a little over a quarter, I think. Is there other low-hanging fruit in our last minute that we might see the Biden administration looking at?
Yeah, I mean, part of the infrastructure part is also something to focus on. So, you know, buildings are not necessarily very efficient, which means that we could get a lot more efficiency out of heating, cooling, et cetera. That's an area where we expend a lot more energy, thus increasing carbon emissions. Another one is electricity generation. Well, another one is in agricultural production. There's both opportunities for carbon sequestration in the soil in terms of reducing carbon emissions, but then there's also waste in terms of energy expenditures that we might not have to put into agriculture. So there's a lot of different areas that we could be focusing on, and it seems like we're working on all of them as we can.
We'll leave it there. Steph, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Michelle, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Steph Tai is a professor at the UW-Madison School of Law. Michelle Krebs is an executive analyst with Cox Automotive. We talked with them today about new White House goals for electric vehicle sales, fuel efficiency, and emissions.